Good morning, everyone. Thanks very much for your company today as we head into Wednesday, 27 minutes to 9. And joining me in the studio, he's here for a day, and the Treasurer, Scott Morrison, has agreed to join us in the studio. Look, if you've got a question you want to ask the Treasurer, feel free. He's got a little bit of time, but he's got some other appointments probably around 10:02. So 9221882. Good morning to you, Treasurer.
G'day, Gary. Good to be here in Perth. It's a gorgeous day.
It is. It's very pleasant. It's a bit chilly for Perth, but that's all right. We can deal with that. Just straight off, how close are we to our GST floor that the Premier's been pushing for quite a while? I mean, do you honestly think we've got any chance of that before March 11, our state election, to sort out GST?
Well, that's not the proposal, and the Prime Minister never indicated that. I mean, what we're planning to do, what we've said is necessary to do, is once the system rebalances itself, as you go out over the next couple of years, Western Australia's share of the GST will actually increase over the next few years. That's what it's projected to do. And what we're trying to do is future-proof the system. So no state, including Western Australia, ever has to go through what we believe has been a pretty egregious outcome. And it was never an outcome that I think those who originally put this together ever conceived it could have that impact. That's why, as a government, we put in an extra $1 billion. That's 20% more than the WA received over the last 2 years to top that up, because we recognise that was a real dud result.
How easy is it to fix that?
Well, it's not easy to address, but what you have to do is you have to be patient. You've got to wait till the system rebalances, and so everybody is back at a normal level, and then you talk about a reasonable floor that you can put in underneath that point. So you're not changing what anyone's currently getting at that time, because Western Australia has increased, and I think that's very, very necessary, and then you can deal with the other issues at that time.
So the other state's whinging about it. If it's just putting in a floor, then it's to their benefit as well, isn't it?
Well, I believe so. I mean, I come from, one of the big eastern states that's always been subsidising across this model. And it could happen to Queensland in the future. They could find themselves where Western Australia arguably possibly could. I would hope no state would ever get to the ridiculous level that WA ever got to again. But that's the point. We've got to future-proof the system. And I think Colin and Julie Bishop and Matthias Cormann and the whole team, Christian Porter and Michaela Cash, Dean Smith, I'll read the whole list, but they have all argued very strongly on this point, and that's why, as I said, we put $1 billion in over the last, both this year and last year, to recognise. I know it doesn't fix it all, but I think it does say that the government listened very hard and acted.
I wonder if from over in Canberra you've been listening to what's been put up as a quicker fix to our budget issues here in Western Australia, and that's by the state government's partners in government, the Nationals. They've got an old leader, re-elected, Brendan Grylls, who's come up with this idea of a $5 per tonne hit on two of the big miners, Rio Tinto and BHP. What do you think about that from Canberra?
No, not flash on it, mate.
Anything else?
No, I think that's blunt enough. I mean, increasing taxes is not something that I think helps the economy, particularly when the economy is weak.
Well, then, okay, how can you have partners in government that are completely at odds on how to fix
things? I'll leave that to issues in Western Australia. I don't really want to get into Western Australian state politics on this issue, other than to say, if you ask me, do I think actually increasing taxes on a sector that which has gone through a pretty difficult time of late, and it will improve, and the production volumes are, of course, doing well, but for the prices we get, et cetera, that all has to be thrown into the mix. But, taxing more is not the answer. What's important is you've got to make sure the people who have to pay tax pay tax. That's why we've cracked down on multinational tax avoidance. That's why we're changing parts of the tax system nationally to recalibrate it where we think it's a bit out of balance. That's one of the key reasons why we're making some of these changes to superannuation, to ensure that that system is sustainable into the future. Increasing taxes just to pump up revenue, which is what Bill Shorten's plan is today, by the way. His plan. I mean, he hasn't got savings. He's just got a lot more taxes, and he calls them savings. This is what I think a saving is.
But you don't spend
as much as you are going to. You actually do something which means you don't spend as much. What Bill Shorten says is, no, I'm over this whole idea that you have to somehow get your spending under control. It's just easier to whack up taxes, and I don't agree with him.
But you're here to talk about a possible, what's being seen as a possible backflip on some of your saving measures, and that's the super tax concessions, because the backbenchers were getting it from the electorates. I mean, you could actually forego some of the savings that you were promising as well.
No, that is not my plan. It is not my plan to, and it is not the government's plan to compromise the budget in how we deal with this issue. It is our plan, though, to continue to work through with colleagues to see how things can be improved or better done, but not at the cost of the budget.
So in terms of the $500,000, it could be $750,000 or...
Well, others are speculating on that. I'm just talking directly to my colleagues about that, and they're making suggestions. We're making suggestions. But the bottom line is we know what this has to do both for the integrity and for sustainability of the superannuation system, and we also know what we need to do in terms of the budget, and both of those objectives will be met.
All right, just on the budget, is it a waste of time and money then to go to a $160 million plebiscite plus maybe $30 million on top of that to fund a yes and no campaign? I mean, is this money that we can afford at the moment on an issue that could be resolved by the people we elect?
Well, we took to the election, and it was a very popular policy ever since it's been announced. I mean, it has majority support in the community that the people who should make this decision are the Australian people. And that's what we're giving them the opportunity to do. Now, democracy is never cheap on things like this, but this is a big change, particularly for many people, both pro and those who oppose it. And how this decision is made, and if this decision is made, then I think all Australians will have a greater sense of comfort that the fact that it was that they made it and that decision was not forced on them by others. Now, you know, parliamentarians are elected to go and vote on a whole range of issues. I understand that. But on something like this, I've made the case, as have others, that we should let the Australian people make this big decision. And I think on the other side of whether that decision is made yes or no, I think there'll be a greater acceptance of the outcome.
Do you think our Premier should be worried that the plebiscite might now go back to sort of February next year at the same time that they're, you know, campaigning hard for a state election? Do you think that the two will cross over? Do you share his concerns about them being...
That's a matter for the Special Minister of State, Scott Ryan, and they have to obviously prepare to conduct this plebiscite. I mean, it's not a straightforward thing, as you say. There are volunteers who have to be recruited. There are contractors who have to be recruited. People working casual on the day. Training has to be put in place. It's not a small thing to run a full attendance plebiscite around the country. So, you've got to get that right, and there's only about 6 or so weeks of Parliament before the end of the year, and bills have to be passed to enable it as well. So there's a lot of work to do to make it happen. We said we'd do it, and we're honouring that commitment.
All right, do you mind if we just take a couple of calls? Treasurer, if you wouldn't mind, June's on the line. He's just popping the headphones on. G'day, June.
Yeah, hi, Gary. Good morning, Mr. Morrison.
Hey, June.
Yeah, I'll ask my questions, then hang up and listen. Right,
okay.
How can you, Mr. Morrison and Mr. Turnbull, justify cutting the age pension where some will lose all of it when some civil servants are getting as much as $40,000 a year pay rise? That was on the radio this morning. And will the retired PMs lose all the thousands in pensions they get and the perks each year? I'll hang up and listen for your reply. Thank you.
Thank you, June. Well, what I believe you're referring to is the decision in last year's budget. And what we did in last year's budget is, in the same way we're making changes on superannuation, we've got an ageing population. There will be fewer and fewer people working to support a growing and growing retired population. And we looked at the pension system last year, and we're looking at the superannuation system now. On the pension system, we had people under the current assets test that could have $1 million and the family home and get access to a welfare payment in the form of the pension. And what we did is we recalibrated the level of assets that you could have in order to have access to a pension payment. And what we also did, though, was for those who have very low levels of assets, so not people who have $800,000, $900,000, $1 million, $1.1 million, but people who have low assets of around $200,000 or $250,000, we will put hundreds of thousands more people on a higher pension at the lower level. So these are the difficult decisions governments have to make, Gary. I mean, none of us welcome them, but when you inherit the deficit that we inherited, I mean, when the changes were made to extend the part pension to more Australians, that cost the budget $1 billion a year, and when it was done, there was $20 billion in surplus and $40 billion in the bank. Now, we don't have that anymore, and so these are difficult changes, but we're making them across the board.
Graham. Hello, Graham.
Good morning, Treasurer. Morning, Gary. Treasurer, can you just help us understand why gambling revenues are not included in the equalisation formula for GST when mining royalties are? This is hurting West Australia quite substantially and not having many poker machine revenues, whereas a state like New South Wales might get, say, $1.5 billion a year in taxes from that source. And can this change in a future adjustment to the formula?
Well, going forward, as you've heard the Prime Minister say when he was here the other day, we'll obviously look at the ability to put a floor in under this, which will, I think, will deal with a lot of the risk that there is for particularly resource-based states like Western Australia, but arguably other places like Queensland. Whether there are other matters that can be looked at in the process of that, well, I think that'll come up at the time. I mean, the black box formula for GST distribution has been around for a while, and I know it's a source of cost and frustration, and any change to it is very difficult. So, look, these are issues that are raised. I know when I come to the West...
Do you understand we feel about that issue? Because, you know, we've sort of held the line on the pokies.
Yeah, and good for WA for doing that. And look, that's why, both as Treasurer and previously as a member of the ERC, we topped up WA's GST distribution by $1 billion in infrastructure projects and funding for that very purpose. That's if you ask me, do we recognise it? Well, of course we do, and there's $1 billion worth of proof.
Mark's there. Hello, Mark.
Yeah, how are you, mate? Well, you don't understand, Scott, mate, is you made a law with the tax department that if you earn over $100,000 in a certain age, then you've got to pay the $3,000 rebate for not being in private health. Mate, in 2007, I had 11 heart attacks and triple bypass surgery. You know, I can't even get health insurance, mate. But yet you're screwing me for $3,000.
Well, it's very difficult to deal with that as a specific case like this, but if you want to talk to the producer, I'm happy to get the details of your particular case and we'll follow it up for you.
All right, hold on the line, Mark. We'll try and do that. Robert's there. G'day, Robert.
Hi, gentlemen. I'd like to ask my question now, and then I'll just hang up. Mr. Treasurer, we had an election just over 2 months ago, and you're asking about people to vote on the same-sex marriage stuff coming up shortly. It's going to cost $160 million. Why couldn't you put a stamp on one of the election papers to say, do you agree to it, same-sex marriage, and ask them to send to say yes or no when during the next election and save us all that money?
Well, we did what we said we would do, and that is... We had an election. We said if we were elected, then we would let the people decide this issue. The Labor Party had a different view. They said they wanted politicians to make that decision on behalf of all Australians. Our position prevailed at that election, and we're now going to go and do it. I mean, we're very transparent about this. We didn't hide anything. We said that's the two options. They're the two policies at the election. The election's over, as you rightly say, a couple of months ago, so we're just getting on with it.
Yeah, okay. But on that, it's going to be later than it was planned.
No, that's actually not true, Gary.
Well, we there was said a commitment
to towards... No, there wasn't, Gary. The Prime Minister has been verbaled on this.
Has he?
He said he would do it as quickly as possible.
His preference
was to try and get it done this year, but if that wasn't possible, then that wasn't possible. We've won the election. We're in now. We're going through the practical issues. It will still be held exactly as he said, as soon as possible, and we hope that to be early next year.
All right. Do you share the view of Matthias Cormann about Bill Shorten on budget repair? I've got to play it to you.
The jelly on the plate.
We've got to play that.
Like a jelly on that plate. The ribble, wobble, jelly on a plate. First opposing, then supporting, then not knowing what to do.
There you go.
Well, Matthias is bang on, as usual, and...
it's just that he says it better than you.
He does. Look, his accent's 10 times better than mine, and his sense of humour, I suspect, is a lot better as well. But Matthias is a great mate. But look, the point he makes is the important one. Bill Shorten will get up there today at the press club in Canberra, and he'll say, I've got all these other savings. They're not savings, they're higher taxes.
But you agree on the excise on tobacco, don't you?
Yeah, I know, and he'll get his opportunity to vote for that one.
4.7 billion.
Yep, he'll get his opportunity to vote for that. He'll get his opportunity to vote for other revenue measures, like the diverted profits tax, cracking down on multinationals. He can vote for that one too. He'll get his opportunity to support the changes that we're making in superannuation to make that fairer.
So is this the
right
omnibus?
The omnibus bill is simply this. Yep. The expenditure savings, so... things that you pay out as opposed to taxes you raise, they had over $6 billion of those savings on expenditure in their what they put to the Australian people. And we've just simply identified that and said, now vote for it. Now, that's just the starting point. I would hope and expect that the opposition would actually engage with us on far more than that. I mean, we have $40 billion just over the forward estimates of measures, both on revenue and on expenditure savings, that will improve the budget. $40 billion. So 6.5 is just the first step, and he should step up. Otherwise, I think Matthias is bang on. It's wibble, wobble, wibble, wobble.
Well said. You're looking forward to the new Senate dealing with Pauline and Darren and so on and so forth. Colourful Senate.
I think this. I've already had, you know, as you'd expect, a number of meetings with people, as has my office. But I think we're, you know, getting across the issues. I think we've got to give people, as they come into the Senate, time to get across a lot of these bills and these measures. Nick Xenophon's been around, so he's known some of them. But he's got two new senators there and a new member of the House as well. So we've taken them through that. You've got others like Bob Day and David Leonholm who've been around a while, so they already know what all these measures are. They've been dealing with them in the last Parliament. So, we'll work with them all. I think there are, arguably fewer moving parts in this Senate, and I would hope there is more sympathy in this Senate for fixing the problem of the budget, because people, I think, sometimes dismiss, oh, yeah, it's a deficit, we're used to deficits and all the rest of it. Well, no, we can't be casual about the deficit, and we can't be casual about debt increasing. I mean, debt interest payments on debt today are one of the major line items in the budget. Now, that is going to continue to grow. And it will continue to grow so long as the opposition and Bill Shorten continues to try and play budget sabotage like he did for the last 3 years. I think people are over that. They just want the parliament they elected to do the job, fix the budget and get on with it.
All right, Federal Treasurer, we'll let you get on with it. I do appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for that. That's Scott Morrison.